There are interesting people in disc golf, and there are boring people in disc golf. Here's one of each on the Fish Golf Broadcast. On this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast, I sat down with somebody you may have heard of, but you've probably heard. Brody Smith. Brody, what you thinking about?
It's a nice little setup you got out here. It's really nice. USCGC week, big week, final major of the year. Really my last tournament of the year. I've got a couple smaller ones. This is the last big one.
Okay. I feel like that's a decent segue into what I really want to talk to you about. We're not going to argue about anything that's like super important to disc golf. I want to talk about Ultimate.
Okay.
Have you ever done that before?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So at this point, you're about 3 years into your professional disc golf career. Is that right?
What was it? So 2020, 2021, 2022. So I guess, yeah, this would be my fourth season.
Sure. And yeah. In the scope of tournaments you've competed at, like disc golf, the USDGC is pretty big, but you've also competed at college nationals and club nationals and some worlds events, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something I'm really interested in is how you and I came from a very similar sports background, playing Ultimate at a reasonably high level for me and a very high level for you. And yet we evolved entirely different disc golf games and strengths. Like there are some other players who I think have kind of followed your path of being very powerful and using overstable discs, whereas I feel like I kind of fell into a more old school influence of using understable discs and like hyzer releases.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on, with the benefit of 3 years of perspective, what was your intent when you started playing disc golf with regards to like mechanics or playing strategy?
Mechanic wise, I definitely broke down my form a lot. So
what does that look like to you?
Yeah. If you go back and look at, pulling a disc, and Ultimate is actually kind of similar to, a normal throw in disc golf, where you're actually running. If you go and you look at my form, and you know, I have videos of how to pull on YouTube that you can go and watch. My form looks completely different. It's very tight. I don't do a big shoulder turn that much. It's very quick. My footwork was a lot quicker, and obviously the nose up, massive hyzer, those kind of different angles of the disc I was throwing at. Going into it, it was one that I thought was going to transition quickly. The only thing that transitioned quickly was throwing forehand putters. Like throwing, I would say that part of my game is something that a lot of people probably struggle with simply just because they don't practice it. And why would you if you only throw it a handful of times? But being in like super awkward positions and throwing forehands from different angles, you know, throwing forehands, you know, releasing at your head level, releasing below your hips. All that's very comfortable with me because of Ultimate. So that's really the only thing that I could say like transitioned over well. Everything else, it took me a little bit of time to figure it out, but I had to like deconstruct everything and have to kind of relearn everything in order to kind of throw these discs the proper way, if that makes sense. Like overstable discs, you can't get away with throwing nose up. And yeah, so that's probably how I went about it.
Sure. And was there like some influence that made you change that, whether it was someone telling you should or your own recognition of, oh, clearly these learned mechanics that I have aren't going to cut it in this other sport?
I think the easiest way of me identifying that was my distance drivers, my fairways, my mids, my putt, they all went the same distance. Like they all traveled 330 feet or whatever it was. And I was trying to figure out like, why the heck is this thing not going farther? And if you don't throw the disc properly, it's not going to have the proper flight characteristics, no matter, cause really you actually are throwing mids and fairways and you're throwing all of them the same speed. It's not like you're throwing a driver 5 miles per hour faster than you're throwing your mid. They're coming out of your hand roughly the same speed. So the only difference is the actual profile of the discs. And
was that something you knew at the time?
No, I had no idea anything about any of these discs. No, I had no idea. We actually were just talking about hole 8 over here, which is the par 4 that has like the Mando by the baseball field. And I was trying to figure out how I missed the Mando 1 year. Cause I really remember like I started really well. I was like 3 under through the first 7. And then I knew I missed the Mando and I was trying to remember it. And Trevor was with me at the time. And he remembered it exactly. I was trying to throw a forehand down the alley and I sawed off this Surge SS and literally into the baseball field. And it's like, now you put me there and you're like, hey, that's how you miss it. I'd be like, no shot. There's no, like, it's such a bad shot. And a lot of that was not obviously understanding the disc, but also going back to the old ultimate form of where you throw nose up, you throw hyzer. And if you do that in disc golf, it's a recipe for disaster, especially for a forehand.
Sure. So you probably had the benefit of like quick access to very elite disc golf throwers. And that made it, I guess, possible for you to, you know, bounce ideas off of them. When I started, I had jank-ass Matt Dollar as the best player in my area.
Yeah.
So, like, how am I going to learn from that? Yeah. But not to savage Matt too hard, although I could. For me, I think my attitude was I have 10-plus years of experience throwing this specific type of disc, so why wouldn't I, like, try to turn everything else into an ultra star.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked really well on like short woods, Southeast courses. But I started struggling when I would come to big wide open courses where wind was more of a factor. Since your intent was very deliberately, I want to be on tour. I want to be an elite disc golfer. Did that kind of like reverse engineer your like practice routine as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing that you mentioned, just going about, you know, being able to have access to some of the top players in disc golf, I think that's a massive advantage. And I wouldn't take that away at all. I think one of the reasons why I was so successful at Ultimate Frisbee is because I had a couple really freaking good players before me that kind of not only showed me what it took as far as skill level, but also like work ethic, determination, like all the things that you know, basically end up making you a champion in any sport. So I was definitely gifted with that. Obviously being linked up with Paul at a very early part in my disc golf career. However, I will say there was some disadvantages to it because I was trying to do things that, like you said, weren't necessarily really suited for my playing style. I was trying to become a player that necessarily doesn't work for me. And if you look right now, you know, you look at like an Isaac Robinson, for example, he's a perfect example of if he was coming up and was like, I need to have a forehand. Everyone on tour that's winning has a forehand. I don't know if he wins these majors, right? Because he's taking away time that he's put into his backhand. And I think that's an important thing of where I think looking at other players and seeing what they do well that you don't, you can kind of take some from that. But ultimately, you don't want to necessarily like try to mold your game completely to someone else because all of our bodies are different and all of our playing styles are different. But going to the disc thing, I was trying to throw like flippy discs. I mean, my go-to driver for the longest time was a Glow Nuke SS. And I was throwing that thing on crazy hyzer. And, you know, now I do that. It's a roller. But the way I was throwing worked. And I think what you just said hits the nail on the head is wind changes everything. And if you ever have played Ultimate, you ever go to the beach and it's windy, it literally separates the men from the boys. Some people can still throw. Some people can't. And I was fortunate enough to be like a power thrower, so I could kind of overpower the wind in Ultimate a lot of times and throw these very sharp hyzer angles with a lot of spin that could kind of cut through the wind more than others. But when you get to disc golf, you don't have to do that. There's discs that do that for you. And so when I kind of made that switch of like, oh, I can just like switch to a different disc and throw the same exact way, it made disc golf a lot easier than the way I was playing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when I was like kind of straddling both worlds I would step up to an upwind pull where, like, a good pull at that can just be like 50 yards, center it up, get a little bit of hang time so that it's covered. Like, you don't have to pin it in the back corner. But I would step up to it and be like, man, I wish I had something overstable. That would be nice.
Yeah, I didn't even know what overstable meant.
Right.
Like, I didn't realize, yeah, like if you could even just have a roach
in
ultimate game to pull, I mean, it would have been a game changer. You could have thrown crazy hyzer spikes in the back of the end zone.
And it's really weird how ultimate players, like, will do anything with that one disc. But disc golfers, if you tell them to play a one disc round, it's like a novelty. They'll try it once and then forget about it.
Yeah. I mean, selfishly, I wish disc golf was different to where we had way less discs to choose from, because I think that not only opens the door for creativity, but also now you have to manipulate the disc. And a lot of times you see the same type of shots. It's just you switch out the disc. So selfishly, I wish there was a way of doing that. I don't think disc golf will ever go that route, because it's just manufacturing. Like, these big manufacturing companies just have so much pull in the sport. And also, like, that just limits so much of what we've known to be disc golf, or at least what I've known to be disc golf the last couple of years. It would vastly change the sport.
Sure. But
I don't know if it would do it in a good way either.
I don't think so. Like, think about Maple Hill or USDGC, where, like, you have four or five shots throughout the round where you very easily could lose a go-to disc.
Yes.
So a lot of players will throw a backup or, you know, a duplicate of some sort. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were limited to 14 discs, well, damn, all of a sudden.
Yeah, I was saying more like, what if like only putters existed?
Oh, I see.
I was going like super extreme of where now, you know, to make your disc go left, you have to throw a crazy hyzer angle, right? Like, or just take out overstable. Like,
yeah, overstable. Sure.
Now, how do you, like, this idea is a stupid idea because there's no way to regulate it. It'd be impossible, but it is something to think about of, like, you would start seeing players throw some crazy angle shots. And we've seen, like, some do it. Like, Eagle and Simon, when they bust out some of these crazy shots they throw, it's really entertaining. I think you would see a lot more of that if the discs weren't so dang good.
Yeah. When you can solve everything with power or mm-hmm. solve it with stability, like, a lot of that creativity gets lost.
Mm-hmm. I'm Jeremy Colling, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I 3D print board game components.
I'm Luke Humphreys, and I never don't listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I'm rock hounding.
If you like where this show is headed, stick around for part two. We'll never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads to start the show. So please support the Fish Golf broadcast by visiting discgolfbra.com for hats and other apparel. Fish stamp discs are available at fishdiscgolf.com and daddydiscgolf.com. And you can save 10% on upperparkdiscgolf.com with the code Andrew10 on backpacks and other items. And now, more lies and outrageous claims from our guest, met with calm reason by Fish. So going back to something you had talked about with some of your ultimate influences kind of teaching you how to train and prepare, I suspect that being part of the Florida college dynasty with Tim Garrett and Kurt Gibson and some other very, very good players, I suspect that entrained in you a lot of the, like, subconscious awareness of what game situations are, where you don't have to consciously think about what the high side of the field was or where the viable space to cut for a throw was. Have you been able to bring that over into disc golf where there's just where you can always know, like, what the wind is or how much to spin a disc or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a surprise that a couple of my best finishes have been at really extremely windy and difficult tournaments, because I think that gives me an advantage in the strategy of how to play the course and not necessarily how to play against the score. Score is pretty much irrelevant at that point. You're just trying to figure out every single hole, like, how do I throw it in a spot to where I can throw the next shot? And I love that style of disc golf. We get to do it a little bit more out here at Winthrop, but a lot of times you know, the courses that we're playing are like 100% just like an execution thing. And it's a different style. And I can totally see why some people do enjoy it. I'm just not as good as it. So maybe that's why I don't enjoy it as much, of where it's just like, step up, can you execute the shot, yes or no? I definitely like playing a little bit more of like, step up, what the heck am I throwing? I have five different options. I have to make the right decision. So yeah, I think the way I explained it in Ultimate is I played it like a numbers game. So I would have the disc in my hand, for example, and I would have a couple people different, you know, cutting and making plays, and based off of who they are, based off of who their defender is, based off the score, based off of where we are on the field, I would kind of have this imaginary number pop up above their head, which is like a percentage. And I would always try to figure out what was the best percentage for us to score. So there might be someone coming underneath on an in cut, and I know that they don't catch discs that well when I'm thrown hard, and I have to throw hard because the defender's on their hip and their defender lays out on underpasses. So like, even though technically they are open, I might look that off and throw something else because it's a higher percentage play. So I did a lot of that in Ultimate. I think disc golf, and then with my golf background, I think course management, those type of decision making, I love that. I love trying to solve the puzzle. And we get to do that a little bit out here.
I think that's, I agree with you. And it's cool that you can take a minute to describe that, like that Ultimate scenario, but it takes milliseconds to process and execute.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in disc golf, sometimes there's just too much doggone time. It's easier to step up and execute. Like, how often do you like frustratedly pitch a driver into a basket after missing a putt?
Yeah, I think that is the main difficulty, is the mental side of disc golf. And I think that's where courses like Northwood, this course, courses that are really challenging, I think that's where you see some people collapse, because they have to have that grind every single hole. And it's not simply, oh, it's a par three, I just throw a shot, if it goes OB, I have a putt for par, move on. That extra thinking of like, am I making the right decision? That is like the killer. It's so hard to like do that versus an Ultimate. There is, like you said, there, you don't, if you're sitting back being like, should I do this or should I do that? The time's already passed.
Yep.
The opportunity's already gone. So that definitely makes disc golf challenging in the sense of like, that it is a much more of a mental battle.
So in term, that's the player's side of it. In terms of the media or course designers or say pro tour operations, how do they get to the point where you don't have, even with some of the courses that have been on tour, there's like throwaway holes. Like everybody kind of just throws this easy shot.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think we get to the point where they are demanding 1 through 18 and you just can't take shots off?
Well, I guess the question is, like, do people actually want that? Because it seems like they don't.
Is that because they're soft?
I don't know. And it seems like players don't want that. It seems like fans, or at least some players don't want that. Some fans don't want that. Otherwise, we would be shifting towards courses that do that more often. And my you know, people hate artificial OB, and that's one of the reasons, I guess, if you don't enjoy this course out here, your main complaint is the artificial OB. And it's like, we're playing on a college campus here. You know, we have to do what we have. Like, we don't have the ability of creating lakes and stuff. And disc golf is from the sport golf, literally came from golf. If golf didn't exist, I don't know if disc golf exists, right? In the sense of like, a lot of the rules, a lot of the ways it's played is looked after on golf. And golf is like the majority of courses that you play, all those lakes are man-made, all those hills, like everything is created for that golf course. So I don't know what the answer is. I would love it to go that direction, but I don't know, man. It seems like it's not going that way. And if that's what people want, then you can't really argue with it.
Sure. And listeners can dig into my back catalog for a discussion that I had about creating disc golf courses in that same spirit, where like there is a large capital investment to do land moving and
so
shaping
expensive.
And design. Obviously, it's expensive,
mm-hmm.
Which is why it costs $200 to play a round of golf and you know, the most expensive disc golf course in the world is what, $25 or so?
Yeah, I have no idea. Is it Maple Hill or Eagles Crossing maybe?
One of those. Like, yeah. But still, like, that's two digits of money. Or, you know, I know people who don't want to pay $2 to get into state parks in Maryland to play.
Yeah.
So I think what that gets to is I'm not convinced that the USDGC Winthrop course has ever really fit, because it's just kind of backdoored into existing facilities. And we do these like kind of minimalist solutions, like raising a basket on a pole or roping out of bounds. I kind of feel like in order for disc golf to grow and become more professional, we need to be able to put elite venues in place where we are shaping the land the way that we want to. We are raising baskets that aren't just on a pole. Mm. They're on like an entire raised green.
Mm. Similar to, did you play Belton? Belton had a couple greens like that, where they actually moved ground and constructed greens, like mounding and stuff. I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. But again, that's probably a multi-year solution in order for somebody to, you know, get the permits and do all that earthwork. And, you know, if you're doing that, then you need drainage and you need to, you kind of need to proof your course. You need pros out there in a non-tournament setting to say, Eagle is going to break the hole by doing this.
Yes.
It's a really tough thing to do, but I feel like a lot of the courses that we've been playing have kind of reached their limit.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good point. It's like hard to kind of continue to grow. You know, Maple Hills, you know, I've talked to them and they're kind of like, we've kind of done as much as we can with the land that we have. I think Fox Run also mentioned something like that along the lines of like, there's just not that much room to change what they have. I've actually been on a little bit of a running kick lately. So I've been watching a lot of like cross country events, and Glen De Vere, actually the course that we play out in Portland Open, is a site for like the Nike, like a really big Nike race that they have. Mm-hmm. And I think most, I mean, if I ran cross country, the majority of the time you're just doing kind of what this course is out here, where you're just on a campus or you're somewhere else and they throw a temporary course down and then it's gone. For the first time ever, I saw, I think it was Oklahoma State, they actually created a course specifically for running, and it was sick.
It's a reason the Okie State team is pretty darn good.
And they're freaking, they're really good. Yeah, and it was sick. And I was like, man, that's, like, just as, like, a random kind of viewer, I don't really watch that much, like, watching them run on that and hearing that this is a cross-country track versus, like, watching them run on a golf course or watching them run in a field or something, it makes a difference. It definitely makes a difference. It's just financially, how far away are we from that? That I don't know. I don't have the answer to that.
All right. Well, Brody is going to get together his business plan and figure out exactly how to do this. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to compliment me lavishly on it, you can find me on Instagram and whatever the fuck Twitter is at fish58320. If you hated the podcast, you found the guests lacking, and or you want them to come back, where can folks find you?
Yeah, just do Twitter, Brody Smith 21.
All right. And we've got to cut this a little bit shorter than normal because Brody needs to go do another podcast. But we can welcome him back. You can holler at him for questions and all that stuff.
Always a good time. Thanks, man.
Thank you. That's all for this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast. But be sure to check out previous episodes and subscribe wherever fine podcasts are sold. Check out Fish Golf Broadcast hats and other apparel at discgolfbra.com. And badger your friends until they listen too. Join us next time as I goad yet another guest into starting a fight with another touring player, campsite host, or toll booth attendant on the Fish Golf Broadcast.